As we continue looking at the Sermon on the Mount and the characters, today we're going to look at three characters. Well, kind of four, but three main ones: a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan. I believe you, probably most of you, are going to know this story. But the scripture we look at today, of course, starts with Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Jesus says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." Around the ancient city of Jerusalem, there is a narrow gate, and it's actually called the Narrow Way. The road up to it is kind of narrow, and on either side, the people just threw junk or whatever was they didn't need anymore. So if you walked off the path, you will usually get into trouble. You're stepping into something you probably don't want to. You know, they didn't have trash service like we do today, so when things needed thrown out, they literally just threw them out. And so you never knew what you... So on this road there, this was a narrower road than some of the other roads going into Jerusalem. And you definitely wanted to stay on the path because you didn't want to go get into the other stuff that might be there. When you got to the gate itself, this narrow way, it was a narrow opening. It was designed so that it could allow one person through and one person only. That animals couldn't come through it, a group couldn't through it. In fact, if you were carrying too much, you probably couldn't fit through it. Ancient times, they liked those narrow ways because it added a certain amount of security. You could keep an eye on a narrow path, on a narrow gate. You could watch who was coming in and out. If someone is up to no good, if you could block this one little way, they weren't getting out. And so Jesus is saying, when it comes to the example of what it means to enter the way of life, the way is narrow. There's one way. And a lot of times it means you can't carry a lot of extra junk along too. Where our focus has to be, a term we've used before on the Sermon on the Mount, has to be on Jesus, has to be on God. When we think about the narrow way, though, it actually can be, or a narrow focus, you might say. A lot of times people get upset and they don't like the idea of a narrow focus, but a narrow focus is actually a good thing. I don't know about you, how many of you have heard the term distracted driving? Your focus is on way too much, right? Yes. You should be focusing on the road, you're focusing on the radio, you're focusing on the kids behind you, you're focusing on the tree you just hit. Which is a lot better than hitting a pedestrian. Though people don't like the idea of having a narrow focus, it's actually, a lot of times, it's a very good thing to have. It keeps us out of trouble. Keeps us out of getting ourselves trying to do too much. Jim Collins wrote a book called Good to Great, Why Some Companies Make the Leap and Others Don't. It's more of a business book, but there's some real interesting points in it. And one of the studies he made that every company that in this period they studied that did went from good to great to meet these high standards, to do all these things, had several principles, but one stood out. One they called the hedgehog principle. You're like, how can a hedgehog have a principle? Well, a hedgehog has basically one thing to do. If it's being attacked, it rolls up into a little ball and it puts all its bristly parts out. So if something decides to go at it, they're going to get a mouthful. That's it. That's what it's got. But it keeps it safe. And they said, for these companies that went that extra mile, that made it well, they had one principle that guided them. They may have been involved in a lot of different areas, but they had one principle, one thing they focused on more than anything else. And because of that, they were able to become super productive. And some of the companies that started out doing well started to do what's called oftentimes, and oftentimes said, it's a good thing to do, diversify. and they didn't do so well. What was the problem? Because they weren't focused. They were trying to do everything good. And how many of you know, how many of you heard this phrase? The jack of all trade and master of... Yeah, well, you have heard it, haven't you? Here's the thing. If we try to do everything, you can do a lot, but you can't be a master of it all. You can't get it all down. You can't be a pro at everything. You know, the world tells us you can have it all. You really can't. And if we're going to succeed, we need to have a narrow focus. And Jesus says that focus needs to be on God. Again, people like to complain that they want to, that being narrow, what they would call narrow-minded, is a bad thing. But the truth is, everyone is narrow-minded in some way or another. I like to, I always find it interesting those people say, how can you be, yeah, we need to be broad-minded and accept everybody for everything. And if you don't, hold it. What did they just do? They're being narrow in this. You have to accept my broad view or your... No. We all, in some areas of our life, have a narrow view of things. We like to maybe sometimes say we're broad-minded, but we really aren't. As human beings, we're naturally focused on one thing. Usually, unfortunately, it's on ourselves. What we want. But Jesus tells us if we're going to follow him, we need to follow the narrow way, his narrow way. Which leads us to the story I'm going to use today as an example of the Good Samaritan. In Luke chapter 10, verse 25 through 37, it says, one day an expert of the law stood up to test him, meaning Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit life? What is written in the law? Jesus replied. How do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus said. Do this, and you will live. As you look at how Jesus taught and how Jesus said things, the commandment, the answer this teacher gave was the one that Jesus gave too. What is the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God, and love your neighbor yourself. In fact, as Jesus taught it, he didn't teach it as two commands. He taught it as one command. In Jesus' mind, as you read the Gospels, you see someone who says, you can't truly love God and hate people. And you're really not going to love people right if you don't love God. He saw it as two sides of the same coin. How are you, if you've got coins, you all know there's a heads and a tails, right? If you deface one side, you've defaced the entire coin, right? Yeah. You can't take half the coin. I want the head side, I don't want the tail side. No. You give me a coin that only has half the markings on it, I'm not going to take it. Why? Because it's not worth anything. Go down to the bank and said, hey, I took the tails off all the coins here. Can I change these in for real money? No, not going to happen. It doesn't work. You have to have both sides. You have to love God and love people. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes we don't understand God. We don't see, understand what's going on. We're confused. So sometimes loving God like we're supposed to is sometimes hard. Sometimes loving people, well, we know people, right? Some people are easier to love than others. But God wants us to love everyone. And so this man's on the right path. Jesus says, do this and live. Because Jesus understood, like I said, if you don't love people, or if you don't love God, you can't love people, and vice versa. It's got to be both. It has to be both. But then the teacher of the law went on and said, but wanting to justify himself, he asked, who is my neighbor? At this point, I would say the teacher of the law is trying to broaden his point of view, or maybe narrowing it into something that isn't right. Instead of what do I need to do to inherit life, all of a sudden he's wanting to justify himself. What do I want to make sure I'm okay here. So who's my neighbor? And sometimes we ask that question ourselves. And though for many of us we know this, sometimes knowing it and practicing are far different. The man, Jesus took up the question and said, the man goes from Jericho or Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell in the hands of robbers. They stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down the same road. But when he saw him, he passed by the other side. So too, when a Levite came to a spot and saw him, he passed by the other side. When a Samaritan came upon him, he looked on him and had compassion, and went and bandaged his wounds and poured on oil and wine, then put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave it to the innkeeper. Take care of him, he said, and on my return, I will repay you for the additional expense. Which of these do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell at the hands of robbers? The one who showed mercy, replied the expert in the law. Then Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Interesting note, he mentions the Samaritan, he mentions the priest, he mentions the Levite, but Jesus never says who the guy was who fell. Was he a Samaritan? Was he a Jew? Was he a Roman? We don't know. And Jesus left it that way on purpose because it doesn't matter. When it comes to the story of the Good Samaritan, this isn't about somebody we know and we like. This is about the people we find on the way. Interesting note about the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. The road is narrow. It was actually built on the sides of a ravine. It had this ravine going down, and of course you couldn't walk the ravine because that would be dangerous. Because if there was ever a flash flood or something like that, which actually does happen in Jerusalem from time to time, you were down there, it caused all kinds of trouble. Not to mention if rocks broke loose and came down, you could be in a world of trouble. So you didn't walk the ravine. There were small roads on either side. And what would not typically happen is you would go down one side to Jericho and the other side back. Sort of like one-way traffic. I've seen a picture of this. And it's kind of interesting. You see this path and you're like, people actually went down this thing? And yeah. So when you would go down this road, it was just very narrow. Also the thing about this is because it was so narrow, because there was no place to go, if you ran across bandits, there was no place to go. There was no place to hide. And this man fell among bandits. He was robbed. And some comes along the priest, the modern, what could be, we could describe it as the modern day pastor. I've mentioned before, the reason I wear a robe is a symbol of a priestly robe, meaning that I'm standing up here as a priest, not as me. Meaning I don't matter. What matters is what I'm trying to give forth. Or the Levite, who is the modern day equivalent of a trustee or a deacon along that line. These were people who had been given the law. They knew the things they were supposed to do. Except when they come along the path, they see him and they decide, you know what, I'm going to go the other way. Now realize, we just described this road. To go the other way, on the other side, meant you had to backtrack, go across and go down the other way. In other words, you had to go down the wrong side of the street to go where you were going to go. This was not convenient. This was not easy. This is actually very difficult. They are spending more time to do this. And why? Why would they do that? Well, the first reason, of course, now we don't understand it today, is contamination. The idea of that is if you touch someone in the Old Testament, you were taught, and especially if they were dead, you were considered unclean. Now, being unclean wasn't a sin. It's just the fact that you could not participate in religious activities. Also, if you got blood on you, and I don't know about you, but if somebody got beat up, what do they got on them? So it was guaranteed, if they're going to see this man, if they try to get by him, they might be contaminated. Maybe it was they looked ahead, saw this guy, and thought, you know, maybe the robbers are still here. I know, I bet all of you have seen those movies where somebody's like, I think somebody's in the house. And then they go ahead and go in. Don't you realize you're in a horror movie? This is the worst thing you can do. They may have been afraid. We don't know what's going on, you know. Or maybe there was a combination of things. I don't know about you, but there are sometimes my decisions aren't based purely on one idea. It's usually I justify it with several reasons. But whatever it was, they backtracked and they avoided this man. But the Samaritan was not by the Jewish standards, was the outcast. They were never good enough. They didn't have their religion right. They were outcasts. And even if you're a Samaritan who converted to Judaism, you were always a Samaritan. They did that. They always seem to remember where you came from. Have you ever met people like that? They always remember your past. Unfortunately, sometimes it's your family. That's another story for another day. But whatever it was, this person, this Samaritan came out, he saw him, and here's a different reaction. Instead of fear, instead of whatever, fear of condemnation, fear of being robbed, he had compassion. The others, they instead of walking the narrow way, they broadened their path to avoid the problem. By the way, side note here, whenever you broaden your path, go down the broad way, it brings destruction, not only on yourself, but those around you. If the Samaritan hadn't come along, what would have happened to that man? He'd have died. So thinking, oh, I'll do my own thing and don't do things God's way, it won't affect anybody but me, is a lie. Anybody who's had a family member who's been on drugs, or who's done things that are complete, or been on alcohol or things like that, know that the person may say, it doesn't affect anybody but me, you know better. In fact, if you're honest and you look in your own life, you may say, my own attitude has caused problems not just in my life, but in the lives of those around me. Which is why Jesus tells us to walk the narrow way, his way. But the Samaritan, he saw the problem. And he did what he could. Because he was traveling, he was probably went ahead and had bandages. He had something he could use. He had oil and wine. And he used what he had. He took him on and put him on his animal, took him to an inn. Note, and a side note here that we don't maybe put into our minds, but the people of Israel, who knew their Old Testament well, when they had heard, took them to Jericho to an inn, probably thought of one person in particular, a person called Rahab, who in the Old Testament hid the spies who'd come from Jerusalem, or come, not from Jerusalem, come from the Jews to spy out the Promised Land, and she protected them. Also a non-believer. A non-Jew who did the right thing. But the Samaritan saw the problem. He did what he could. He didn't change his lifestyle. He didn't decide, okay, this man's been robbed. I need to move in with him and then take him home to my family. And no, he did what he could. He used what he had. And he even told the innkeeper, if there's a little bit more, when I come by this way again, I'll make up the difference. See, the same thing is sometimes we get overcome because we see the problems of the world around us. We see the issues of everything happening and we wonder, what can I do? Well, maybe you can't do anything. I don't know about you, but I doubt the Arabs or the Palestinians or Hamas or even the Israeli government's going to call me this week and ask me what they should do about the Middle East problem. How many of you think they're going to call me? Yeah, y'all know that too. It's not going to happen. You know, I don't think they're going to call you either. In fact, I don't think they're really listening to any of the presidents or the advisors or prime ministers who are trying to intervene from around the world. But you know what I can do? I can't make a big difference, but I could go outside and look and say, okay, they need this on this list to help me to need. I can do that. I know so-and-so is struggling right now. I can give them a call. I'm going to tie this together with what I talked about last week, live out the golden rule. Do unto others as they'd have me do unto them. Or do unto others as they have them do unto me. You know, I should do others to others, help them. Not the way I want to be helped, but what they really need. With what I have. And sometimes what I have isn't enough. But I do what I can with what God has given me. And that's what God calls us to do. If we're going to live out the narrow way, love God and love people, we need to be like the Good Samaritan. Do what we can with what we have. Living out the Christian life means doing that. Do what you can with what you have. Sometimes you don't have it. There are people here who are facing troubles. I don't have the right words. I don't have anything to help. I can listen. And sometimes all I can do is cry. Because I can't do anything else. But I've noticed sometimes when you're willing just to do that, it makes a difference. And Jesus wants you just to do what you can with what you have. To walk his narrow way. Because it's going to lead to life. It doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect. If you remember the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus didn't say everything was going to be perfect. In fact, he said for his followers, he said, oh, things are going to be pretty bad sometimes. That's my own paraphrase on it. But if you follow my way, it leads to life. And life not just for you, but for those around you. When you start getting off the path, you get yourself into trouble. You start justifying yourself and broadening your horizon so you can figure out, okay, I don't want to go that way, so I'll do something else. You get yourself into trouble. But we need to walk Jesus' narrow way. Why? Because it leads to life. Say, I don't know if I can live that out. You're right, you can't. Neither can I. That's why Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life later. Because he knows we can't do it in ourselves. We're going to fail. In fact, those of us who've accepted Christ still mess up. Sometimes, big time. we still fell. But we have someone who's there to help us to walk that path we need to be on. To strengthen us. And sometimes just to be there to weep with us. Because sometimes that's what we need. And Jesus says, I want you to walk this path with me. I'll give you the strength. I'll give you what you need. Isn't rent really sense, like I said, it's living out the golden rule. That's the narrow way. And it isn't always about getting a reward now because you don't. Sometimes you help someone, you give out the 2 denarii, you've spent your oil and wine, and you maybe never hear what happened to them again. But let me tell you something. Those attitudes, that doing those things, leads to life. It leads us to where we need to go. So let's live out this narrow way. And in doing so, let's show the light of Jesus to the world. So let's stand together now and sing, the light of the world is Jesus, because truly he is, because he is the way, the truth, and the life.
He dwells in darkness with sin-blinded eyes. The light of the world is Jesus. Go wash at his bidding in my willow's eyes. The light of the world is Jesus.
Now, Father, I ask for your blessing upon all these here today. As they leave there forth from this place, may they show forth the light of Jesus to the world around them, and may they live forth the narrow way. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. God bless you. Have a great Thanksgiving.